This is Paul St. Peter, the voice of Ninetale Fox from Naruto. You've been listening to Nutty Bites.
It is now 7 o'clock. So, welcome to Nutty Bites live at Balticon 49. And it sounds like there's a lot of people here.
Yeah!
Because there are. It's standing room only. It's standing room only. Oh my gosh. Some people have to sit on the floor. It's horrible.
Nutty, how did we pack this stadium?
Well, I'm just that awesome. Shut up, baby. I know it. All right. So we have a special treat for everyone. We are doing Nutty Bites Live, but this is a little bit of a crossover episode.
What?
It's a crossover of Nutty Bites Live, Consumption, and 1/3 of Skinner Co. is here.
Huzzah.
So we're going to be discussing Edgar Allan Poe versus Stephen King, two prolific authors in the horror genre who helped shape their genres. And when I say debate, as many of you already know, that just means we're just going to talk about how awesome they are. So let's introduce everyone here. Let's start with my regular co-host or antagonist.
Hi, I'm Tech.
And you're just Tech because that's what everybody knows you as.
Yes, I am Tech. I am the
From the Nutty Bites podcast, aren't you?
I am from the Nutty Bites podcast. I write about physics and ballistics and nerdy military stuff. You can find my stuff on Nutty's website, nimlas.org.
We'll get to the pimping later.
My grumblings from the vault are all there. I am the center square of these debates, and I never shut up.
A.K.A. he likes guns.
I do
A.K.A.
like guns.
Why he likes
have we never podcast together before?
Why have we never? Because you don't invite me, that's why.
Because she's scared of door humping, that's why. Okay, and next we have Christiana Ellis.
Hello.
Woohoo!
Hello.
Tell people who you are.
I'm Christiana Ellis.
Hooray!
So I'm a writer.
Woman in
what?
The funniest woman in podcast.
Oh, well. How could I argue with such a generous compliment? Thank you. Well, I would never self-apply that. I will accept it from others. I am the author of Nina Kimberly the Merciless, which is available as a free podcast. Also, Space Casey, which is a podcast science fiction radio play. I also do lots of other things at ChristianaEllis.com and sometimes things with Nutty and some of the other not yet introduced members of the panel.
And just so everyone realizes, this right here is a pin on Rory. That's right. He is one of the Casey cadets.
That's right.
For Space Casey.
Old school.
OG. Yeah.
Very nice.
And let's come over here to Viv. Introduce yourself.
I'm Vivid Muse, and I've been podcasting since 2008. State of the Heroes podcast, which is an MMORPG, and then a family podcast, and then a couple of other things. Oh, and Girls Rules, which I was going to...
Which is coming back. It's coming back.
It's coming back. Officially, Girls Rules is coming back. It's a podcast I used to do.
Hear that, Dave Slosher? It's coming back.
Maybe. Well...
Maybe it's coming back.
Even often enough to make him happy. He really just wants it, like... that's hard to just ignore.
Yes.
I also do... my husband and I are now taking over specficmedia.com, and we're keeping that running for our dear friend, P.G. Holyfield.
And we appreciate it.
And we enjoy it so far. We're tired, but we enjoy it. And on that, we have... Consumption with Christiana, Chooch, and I, and then we have BTW with Nettie and Christiana and Chooch, and we've got more stuff coming out there too. So,
and we've got all sorts of announcements and projects for the end of this, so I need to leave time. And now we've got 1/3 of Skinner Co.
I'm Jared. I provide the fiction for Skinner Co. You can find it all over at skinner.fm, and we're going to keep my introduction short.
Oh, okay then. He writes the stuff. He writes the pulp. That's the important bit.
I provide
there.
The fiction.
While maintaining Viking hair, yes, it's important. That's where all the words are and the power. So, Stephen King, Edgar Allan Poe, a lot of people would say, can you really lump those two together? But they have a lot of similarities. They have some major differences. But I don't think anyone can deny that they have definitely shaped their own genres. So, before we begin, this panel definitely seems to have some leanings towards one author or the other. So I'm going to go across the panel and have everybody tell me which one is going to be, who are you rooting for, and why are they important to you, and what is your history there. So let's start with JRD now.
Oh, that's a bit of a tough one. I think when I was a kid, I would have definitely went with Stephen King. He was sort of the one I began with. But the older I get, the more down the Poe alley I go, if you will.
That's a dangerous alley.
Yeah, it is a dangerous
it's
alley.
It's creepy, too.
There's a murderous monkey at the end of it.
There is!
Spoilers!
Viv?
I grew up reading my mom's Stephen King's books. I mean, I would be horrified. I never did let my kids read that stuff at that age, but my mom had her collection out, and it was a lot more interesting than, you know, no offense, Judy Blume or anything, but so it was literally cut my teeth on Stephen King. But I also, I've only done a little bit of reading of Poe. I just love him because my mother loved him, and that's what led her to King, which got me hooked on the horror. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. Great connection. Mm-hmm. And Christiana?
So I think while it's very important to understand Poe's place in the history of the genre and certainly very formative and influential, I personally, and I think in terms of influence on today's culture, I'd give it to King.
Dem spiting words. No, just kidding. And Deck?
I will defend Poe staunchly during this debate for... very few reasons, mainly being I haven't read any Stephen King. But we will get to those reasons later.
Okay, and I am a huge Edgar Allan Poe fangirl. I mean, during the goth phase, it's very typical, you know? And I even took a college course on Edgar Allan Poe and just immersed myself completely in him. I am also a pretty big fan of Stephen King, not to the point where I call him Uncle Stevie, but I have visited all of the sites and everything because my sister, who is one of my best friends, does call him Uncle Stevie. And I've read quite a bit, and I definitely have the works of his that I enjoy and the works of his that I don't enjoy so much. Generally, if the protagonist is a writer, I'm not such a big fan. But there are exceptions, of course. Misery. So, all right.
Whoa. If the protagonist is a writer, you what?
I get bored. It just feels self-indulgent for me.
Oh, that's really
interesting. For the writer to write about a writer being the protagonist.
Okay. For Stephen King's books.
Okay.
It's something I've learned.
Hmm? Have you read Dark Cat?
No, I haven't.
That's a good
exception.
I was going to say.
See, you mentioned Misery, too, but we were just listening to Salem's Lot, and that's about...
Yeah, I'm not a big Salem's Lot fan.
There's at least one writer character in almost all of them.
This is true. This is true.
I can tell you this. Salem's Lot had me go and get my little crucifix, my rosary, out of my jewelry box where I had not touched it for years and put it on and sleep in it every night. I'm like, I'm
Try driving through Pennsylvania at night while listening to the radio.
No.
No, try driving through Maine at night.
Okay, I got to ask, though, what about Stay By Me? Where do you fall on that one?
Oh, I love Stand By Me.
But that's all...
But that's not the protagonist. I mean, he becomes a writer.
He was the child.
The body, yes.
The body, sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Oh. Come on, I had Wesley Crusher. That was awesome.
Plus, Jerry O'Connell as a little fat kid.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you guys are talking about...
And now he's got Mystique.
You guys are talking about Stephen King's standalones. Stand By Me, The Green Mile, Shawshank, which is utterly probably his best thing.
I love Shawshank.
Those are stuff where, he took a break and said, well, I'll try something different.
What was it? Was it Eye of the Dragon? What was the fantasy that you did?
I mean, I just
got goosebumps thinking about it. I was like, oh, yeah, that fantasy book. So, yeah.
Our 10-year-old read that one.
See, that's why King is the man.
Yes.
So I'm gonna try a little social experiment here.
Okay.
I'm going to try something. I'm going to say a line, and I just want everyone to respond with what comes naturally. If I say the words, quoth the raven...
Nevermore.
Now, anyone here try to get that reaction from the crowd with any line from any Stephen King book ever.
Okay, can you guys go over the ending?
We all float down here.
Yeah.
Not the same...
Richie.
Type of reaction.
Beep, Richie.
So that's my point.
The only counter... point. I don't mean to interrupt.
Please go ahead.
The only counterpoint I would make to that is I would say if you asked 100 people off the street, that would be the only thing any of them know Poe from at all.
Right. This is true.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out that all work and no play make Jack a dull.
All work and no play. Yes.
A very good answer, as a matter of fact. My point is that Stephen King has been influential to this generation, and, you know, for the last 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. Poe has been influencing writers and creatives for over 100 years.
So is this your literary get off my lawn rant?
Absolutely.
You're too young to be good.
Yeah. You're really good right now, Stephen King. Talk to me.
Talk to me in 50 more years and we'll see if we still remember.
Talk to me when you're dead.
Argument's
going to
be that, okay, so in 50 more years when he's had 100 years to influence, well, Poe's just going to have that much more time.
So in 50 years' time, at Balticon 99, we'll come back and argue this again. We'll all be heads in jars.
I'll make a counter to you, Jack.
Sure.
Two things. One, Poe was more of an American romantic writer than he'd have to be completely a horror writer, whereas Stephen King is more specifically in that genre.
But absolutely not.
Yeah.
He did influence it, and he did write horror, but that was his main influence, was the more romantic movement. And you're quoting from a poem versus prose. Poems are going to have infinitely more retainability in people's minds to come up with that next line. And it's been done in The Simpsons. It's been done in everything.
Yeah, but The Simpsons version is oh, come on. That is so fantastic. To steal what Jason Banks has said, Stephen King's standalone work is so good. A Green Mile, I don't think that's horror. Shawshank, I don't think that's horror. Yeah. Stand By Me, I don't think that's horror. Okay. So to call Stephen King a horror writer, I think is doing the guy a disservice as well.
He is more primarily in that genre than Poe was primarily in that genre.
Really?
Well, here's my woo. Stop it. Here's my argument brain, is literally. That Poe helped shape the horror genre and create it. I mean, There are definitely people before him, but if it weren't for Poe, would there be, well, there probably would have been someone else, but would there be all of the other authors that then fell into that genre and created this genre so that Stephen King had a place to live?
Well, Poe came before King, obviously. Yeah. He's made a huge influence. When you get on The Simpsons, you know you've made it. You know?
Okay, but Stephen King's been on The Simpsons twice.
Well, no, that might be something Tech needs to think about.
The flip side of that, though, is that Poe died poor and penniless, whereas he also put a path in place so Stephen King could be incredibly rich in his own lifetime, as opposed to...
Technically, the verdict is not quite out yet. It's possible that Stephen King could still die for it.
This is true.
It
does seem unlikely, but we don't. It's not yet.
Yeah. Considering the Franklin Mint is in his garage, and you know, it's like, well, what are you going to write a book about this time, Stephen? Well, I was thinking of a possessed carpet. Okay, how many zeros do I put on this check?
A spooky lamp.
just as a brief tangent, I was really tempted when you said, quote the Raven, to say, eat my shorts.
Absolutely.
I would have been good. I mumbled it under my breath.
Mike, the thing is, we talk about Stephen King, the horror writer. But everything that we've mentioned as of so far, or most of what has been mentioned so far of his body of work, has been his non-horror stuff. I mean, okay, there is, you know, Cujo, Christine... You know, Pet Sematary, Stand, you know, all the other things. But then we say Shawshank and Green Mile and Stand By Me are the ones that come out immediately first. And but for a
power,
for a, and he's got a huge body of work. But as a horror writer, it seems that collectively the stuff that we talk about first and the things we remember is not the really scary stuff. I know it's the stuff that hooked me. I mean, we all know his Poltergeist. You know, Richard Bachman that wrote The Running Man. It's not really horror either.
That's one of the reasons why they're so... That I really wanted to pit them together is they're both put into the horror genre, but they're both not really horror only. You know, this is not just, all right, they just write horror. It's they have a huge body of work that covers lots of stuff, and they've influenced so many other people... And actually shaped the horror genre, mm-hmm. and other genres, that That's why these two are such giants.
Well, Poe basically created the mystery novel in his time, right?
Well, there were no detective stories, really, before him. There would be no Sherlock Holmes without Edgar Allan Poe.
And even, but now we look back, and it's not Murderous Monkey that we first think of. It's that one poem he wrote.
Yes.
And, Tuck, you mentioned The Running Man. Have you actually read The Running Man?
I have not.
It is very different than the film.
Nothing like the movie.
It is actually a much better show in the book than it is in a movie. I'd much rather see that version.
Well, there's no Arnold Schwarzenegger in the book.
Is that a plus or a minus?
Can I ask a question?
Depends on what Schwarzenegger was.
The concept for Running Man kind of makes me think of Mockingjay, Hunger Games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was a big influence.
I don't know if that's a positive in Tuck's mind. But
well, Katniss is much, much better than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, the written version of Running Man is basically what we now call The Amazing Race on TV, but with murder.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll get there.
I'm hopeful.
Or the long walk.
Yeah, the long walk, yeah.
The long walk. To be fair, when you say you named them the non-horror books of Disney, those happen to be the ones that translate typically into the better movie adaptations. Misery, The Green Mile, Shawshank. These are much better movies than typically the horror adaptations because, unfortunately, a lot of times they try to make schlock out of them.
Right. Do you think Misery
is horror? Coming for them to your memory. You read them, you saw it.
What is going on in Rich's life that he doesn't think Misery is horror? Oh, you poor, poor man. Horror,
well, he does have a hider in the house.
He needs a hug.
It's a thriller.
Yeah. When you're talking about they're not really horror, I mean, to some extent, I think Stephen King considers himself horror, but, you know, yeah, you could look at them as dim to horror as Kurt Vonnegut considered himself a sci-fi.
Oh, try to classify Kurt Vonnegut. Oh, you'll get a headache.
It is a very important point, though, is how much of this are you calculating in on the ability to build suspense versus, you know, kind of stuff like how much do you consider it horror if it's only suspenseful and they show stuff off screen? Like we're talking about here,
It depends on how specific you want to get with the genre. And I'm trying to remember who it was who just said, get rid of the genres because it's defeating.
Too hard to classify.
But, exhausting.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I was actually just kind of thinking, I'm not sure what the value is in deciding, you know, what's horror, what's not horror. I mean, is the question, who is the better horror writer?
Yeah,
because that might be a different question than just
exactly
one versus the other. I mean, is it fist fight?
I don't know.
I would
hope so.
Well,
I think King would win at this point.
Yeah, King's
really?
No, if
Poe has to forfeit, he's dead.
If they were both in their prime, if they were both in their prime, Poe is a knockdown like newspaperman. He sleeps in ditches. I think he has the fist fight advantage. Like, he's already living a rough life.
I don't know. Get a couple of bottles of Listerine and King.
Hey, Jerry, I don't know.
King couldn't even get out of the way of the car.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
He got hit by a van and he lives.
You make a point.
So,
Poe never succumbed to the tuberculosis that plagued everyone else. Okay, granted, he was probably a carrier. Jason, you had something to say.
Oh, no, I was going to say that, you know, we talked about, you know, a lot of their standout stuff is actually not their horror stuff. But I think what they kind of fell prey to is that people knew them for the darker, for the scarier stuff. So they just kind of got blasé, like, oh, yeah, they wrote another scary thing. I mean, think about it. Look at Stephen King. He had It and all these other things. But until he did something that was completely off the wall, such as The Dark Tower, where he covers almost every genre he's ever written in, smashes it together and goes...
What's strange is The Dark Tower comes so early in his actual body of work, mm-hmm. but then he immediately moves away and starts doing proper horror. Like, he wrote a lot of that stuff even before he did Carrie, and it was only afterwards that it really came to be as popular as it is now. But I mentioned them in their prime for a very specific reason, because I'm going to be honest... After Insomnia, I don't really like Stephen King anymore. Like, I find his writing style has kind of fallen away. He doesn't have quite that same punch he used to. I don't know if it's because he's sobered up. I don't know what the cause is, but I don't find the modern stuff has as much
contribution. Have you read the collection of short stories that he wrote in the early 2000s?
Everything's Eventual?
No, Sunset. Just After Sunset?
No, I haven't read that one.
Epic. Return to form.
I am a much bigger fan of King's short stories than his full-length novels, that is for sure. The Body, hello.
Yeah.
I think that I would love to read even more of his stuff in short form. And then that also works really well with Poe because most of his stuff is in short form.
I would say with Just After Sunset, he said in the foreword, and I'm going to mangle it somewhat, but I think he said he had kind of fallen out of love with the short story, and then somebody asked him to be an editor for, I think, the New York Times short story collection that year before, and he sort of rediscovered his love for the short story, and so he wrote all of these stories, and it very much is a return to the form of, you know, the Skeleton Crew and
Road Work, and you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly true from the novel perspective. He does have a tendency towards sprawling, which is, you know, not decreasing. Although I feel like sometimes if that's what you're in the mood for, like 11/22/63, the time travel saving JFK book, I enjoyed the hell out of that one.
Uh-huh. I'm finding a lot of the stuff that I find he has more fire behind now is almost his hard crime pulp stuff that he's putting out. Mm-hmm. And I know it doesn't sell as well. I know it's not the bank that everything else is for him, but that's where I feel like his fire is now.
Yeah. I forget the title, but the baseball, the one about the...
Yeah.
The guy who was a baseball player, and it turns out he was a killer.
Yeah.
The spoilers!
Anyway, yeah.
So, all right, what I'd like to do now is I would like to go through and have each of us talk about our favorite works, you know, just rattle off the works of each of these authors that really mean something to you and well, just basically make your top list. So I'm going to start with Poe, simply because we've been very focused on Stephen King right now. Everyone always talks about Nevermore, but I mean, there's the Telltale Heart, which is just creepy.
That's my jam.
There's the one, the House of Usher. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that one so much.
Did you do the Cask of Amontillado?
Yes, and I was going to say, everyone knows from their standardized tests, the Cask of Amontillado. Oh, yes, there was always one of those writing samples that you had to read for reading comprehension. Yeah.
It's, it's in the Canadian high school curriculum as well.
Yes, absolutely. That was always there. It was Cask of Amontillado, it was Speckled Band, and it was a Maya Angelou thing, and that one scene from Black Boy.
Pit in the Pendulum.
That's another really great one. I don't want to list like his entire body of work, but there's so many that I could just read over and over again. And of course, let's not forget The Crazy Homicidal Monkey. I mean, Murder in Rue Morgue. So, sorry, I said a whole bunch, and I don't mean to steal from everybody. So,
King did a killer monkey too.
That's true.
So, Tech, why don't you tell us what are your favorites?
Edgar Allan Poe's entire volume of work makes a book about yay thick, about the size of the stand, or it, and it goes on the shelf quite nicely right next to it. The only thing I can say about so we talked about Edgar Allan Poe and the Raven being featured on a Halloween episode of The Simpsons. Well, not only that, but the Telltale Heart was ripped off and made into an entire episode where Lisa had to enter a science fair project of a diorama, and they used a metronome to make the beating of the heart under the floorboards. So there you go. I'm not the most prolific reader of these two to be up here on this debate, but I will defend one vehemently because it's what I do in these debates. I just pick one and set, you know,
the antagonist.
Bare my teeth, lock my jaws, and just fight to the utter death so you crowbar me off at the end. And I'll stop there.
Okay, and Christiana?
I'm my favorite from both?
Your favorite from Poe.
Oh, from Poe. I think Cask of Amontillado is the one that just lives in my head a little bit in terms of just how kind of cold-blooded it is. It's not, you know, a crime of passion, or at least it, you know, it's passion that is turned like curdled milk, because it's just it's such a slow motion murder. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. Yeah, well, and the idea that they're just face to face and they can talk to each other while it's happening.
Yeah,
it's very Klingon. You know, revenge is a dish best served cold.
Oh, yeah. Just like
God. Yeah.
Jared. It hasn't been mentioned yet, and I mean, I love the whole body. I love the Pit and the Pendulum, but as a writer, I found myself influenced by his poem, The Bells.
Bells.
Just because there's so much repetition, but you cannot help but pick up the rhythm and the use of language in that poem, despite the fact that he's repeating the word bells like 60 times.
Well, yeah. he does that in a couple of his works, but you end up finding yourself reading it out loud. You kind of have to.
Yeah.
The Raven does that to me every time, where I'm sitting there, I'm trying to be quiet, and then I end up reading it out loud because it just flows that way.
Mm-hmm. When I took this course, any time we did anything, we were constantly reading things out loud because even in his short stories, Poe was so lyrical mm-hmm. that everything flows well. And there's actually some recordings of him actually reading, which is really wild. And if you've ever heard the Vincent Price version, version of The Raven, I mean, it's just fantastic, and a couple of his other stories. And then there's also the what is it, Jay Moore doing Christopher Walken?
Yeah, Jay Moore doing Christopher Walken.
Reading Nevermore.
Doing The Raven.
We've mentioned a bunch of Stephen King's movies, but Vincent Price actually, the cycle of Poe films that he did in the 60s
yes.
really reinvigorated American Victorian-style horror. Like, he really brought that genre back to America. And, I mean, it was also partially Roger Corman. But, you know, that was all before King. That was what King was kind of partially, you know, influencing him through that period.
Absolutely. I mean, Viv talked about how she got into Poe because Poe was an influence for King. And I think that is very important. All right, so now I want to go through and I want us to talk about the works of Stephen King that are very important to us. And for me, Misery moved me. I was really wrapped up in that book. And I don't know, for me, it was just phenomenal. And his short stories are my favorites. Pretty much if it's short, I love it. So let's go with Jared.
The unabridged version of The Stand, the meaty, like, beat off a burglar with it kind of version of The Stand. No, Mr. Roche, do not beat off a burglar.
Thank you.
There was something about that book, and it came to me at a very kind of tender time in my life. It wasn't too long after my father had passed. My mom was extremely busy in her life, but I knew she had a love of Stephen King, and this was one of the important books to her. And so to go through it, it's a huge book, and at the time I wasn't reading incredibly quickly, but I did it over the course of a summer, and I basically watched the world fall apart and then be put back together again. Mm-hmm. And that really meant a lot to me at the time.
Mm-hmm. What about Christine?
Oh, are you being a smart...
Paco.
Right now? Because I think you're being a smart...
Paco.
There's the edit.
Sorry. I have a special... Okay, I'm going to make a confession. I have a special bottled vintage King that I keep on the shelf. I have never read Christine. It is written right in the heart of my favorite period of his work, but I have not read it. On my deathbed, I'm going to be like, hand me that book. Because I know that after a certain period, I fell out of love. And it wasn't necessarily... It was his writing. There's a shift in it after Insomnia, after Needful Things, that just didn't quite feel the same to me. And I know this is golden vintage King that I'm just saving for a beautiful day.
That's nice, actually. By the way, I just need to add in that the gunslinger part of The Dark Tower, I am in love with.
Yeah.
But not to keep going back to it, but...
But I pulled that out of everything else.
Yeah, those first three books are amazing, and then I feel like everything after is part of that shift where his writing doesn't quite hold me as much.
But I also feel like The Dark Tower is another self-indulgent thing, and he says it is. He's like, I wrote this for me, not for you, so there you go.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that when he has all his works connecting, and I don't know if that's something that Poe really did.
I don't think he did.
Doesn't have as much world building.
I think they're all connected in the sense that they live in his head.
Although, if you want to read a really good love letter to Poe that connects everything, you need to read Usher 2 by Ray Bradbury.
Mm.
Or you need to listen to Leonard Nimoy's reading of Usher 2.
Oh, I am on that. I am on that.
Freely available on YouTube. They're a great video.
All right, so Christiana, your favorite king?
So probably Under the Dome. No, no. How about Cell? No? Mm-hmm. No?
Okay. I actually really enjoyed Cell, despite,
Cell was okay.
I think it depends on whether we want to say the whole Dark Tower series, or...
It's up to you.
The whole series, I mean, you know, I could certainly see, you know, it being called self-indulgent, but to my mind, it's less that it's self-indulgent and more that it's personal. And that worked for me. Mm-hmm. And I think just this really sprawling thing, the you know, half fantastical, half post-apocalyptic science fiction kind of feel of the world, but that also ties in with different time periods of our own real world, and having all of that kind of mushed together in this big sprawling epic thing, it really worked for me. I think my favorite of the series is probably the Drawing of Three, the second book. But I really like the whole series. I tend to think of it as one thing.
Okay. So, Tech, you have stated that you've never read any of the prose, but
I've read a lot of the movies. Yeah,
adaptation.
I've seen the movies, and so I'm going to say less favorite. I'm going to talk about influential. So influence is something that has caused something to change in my life, and for that I'm going to have to pick Misery, because Misery automatically creates a wonderful excuse for me. People are like, oh, Tech, how come your book hasn't come out yet? Have you seen Misery? Have you seen what happens to authors? There's a reason I'm not putting my book out. I'm scared. I mean, if that can happen to Dick Tracy, what's going to happen to me?
And
I like my angles are awesome. Thank you very much.
Wasn't Dick Tracy?
It was what's his
James
face?
James Caan.
It was Sonny Corleone.
Even worse. If that happened to Sonny Corleone, I want nothing to do with that. No, thank you. I love my ankles, and I'm never going to Maine again. Next.
That's probably for the best anyway.
He says after we've made, the trip through Maine how many times?
Yeah, now we don't have to. We just go to Ontario. We're good.
Okay.
Carry on.
So now I want to talk a little bit about how each of these authors have really shaped... All right, they shaped the genre. We talked about how King has really opened up the genre. I really believe that King may be one of... He's part of that generation of writer that can just sit and write and live and do whatever they want. And that just doesn't seem to be possible anymore. If you're a writer now, you're a writer and a promoter and a personality, and you need to be able to engage with your fans, whereas Stephen King could just sit over a typewriter and get buckets of cash. Mm-hmm. And Edgar Allan Poe really had to do all of
that without the buckets of cash.
Yeah, all of the hard stuff without
any... And tuberculosis.
Any, yeah,
it's strange you mention that, but one of my favorite things about especially the sort of 80s novels from Stephen King, I would always open them up and there would be that 5-page intro where it's just him talking. And he's like, I'm sitting in a hotel room in Bangor or whatever, and he's talking about some agent who called him Steve and how much he hates that. And that was always one of my favorite parts of those books. Like, just that little sliver of... What is it like to be Stephen King? Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely. But I think that because of that, we kind of have this idea of what I'm going to grow up and be a writer is like.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's quite possible anymore. But what I want to talk about now is I want to talk about how much each of these people have shaped pop culture. Because they're all over. There are references everywhere for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... Everyone does a Shining episode on TV, you know?
Or Shining, if it was a Simpsons
Shining.
Because they didn't want to get sued. I'll start off with one.
Yeah.
There's a band called Poe. There's no band called King. There's a band called Queen, but that's not related.
Stephen King is in a band.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of scary.
And he's got a... But
isn't that the point?
He's working.
He's got a whole, audiobook company that...
He owns a radio station.
Yeah.
I own a radio station, too.
That's true.
Fair point.
Community radio, so we all own a radio station.
Christiana?
Again, this is a little bit like what I said right at the beginning. Poe is clearly formative. You know, he started a lot of things, but many of those things have been iterated, and I don't want to improved is a messy word, but iterated and expanded upon since. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of just exposure, King has got to be more influential. Now, even if you want to say individual Poe stories might stand the test of time more than any individual book from King, King has this massive body of work that millions of people have read. And I think Poe is starting to be something that only literary students really are that familiar with.
And goths.
And goths. Hello, hot topic.
Okay, yeah.
And people in Maryland.
Yes, and people in Maryland.
Would you have a show like Ruby Gloom? It's like a kid's show that's like a goth kid's show. Would you have something like that without an Edgar Allan Poe? Or would you have a character like Emily the Strange? Or stuff like that. So there is a lot of influence in the culture, just sort of, not even just with his work, but with his style.
To swing the other way with Stephen King, I'm coincidentally reading a re-release of Clive Barker's first novel right now. And in the intro, he's writing it from current time, looking back at when he originally wrote it. And he says, you know, it was the summer of 1989, I had just had a couple of short story collections put out. I was basically becoming famous because Stephen King had said, this is the next big thing in horror, and I wanted to do nothing but write a novel that was not Stephen King. Everyone was trying to write exactly what he was doing. Everyone was writing small towns. Everyone was writing that weird thing in the old house. And I needed to sit down on the I knew that I needed to sit down at the typewriter and do the exact opposite. And he did. He produced it. And there are so many other people who both felt that finger. Like, had Stephen King say, you know what, Evil Dead, this is a great movie. And that... We have Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man films, everything Sam Raimi does. That was entirely because Stephen King happened to see this cruddy college-made film at one point, and Bruce Campbell became huge.
So we have Stephen King to thank for the chin.
Yeah, exactly. We do.
One other thing that just occurred to me, too, when we were when you were talking about the idea that King is... He had the good fortune and the talent to become a... best-selling author and to make this huge name for him that basically does most of his marketing for him at this point without having to do the promotion that today's authors do. But one of the other things we have to remember is he works his ass off. He writes book after book. He just keeps putting them out.
And he's not spending time sleeping on somebody's grave and writing letters and roses or any of that.
Yeah, so I think that's a big part of his success too, is he is prolific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The story behind Carrie is that he was working like double shifts and they were living in this tiny apartment. They had their first kid and he got a phone call and it was essentially, I read your book, here's $100,000 advance, which, to go back to what Nutty was saying, that never happens anymore. You will never see that again. But he basically literally made it overnight, and then Carrie the movie comes out and he's made at that point.
Have you guys ever heard Stephen King's telling of going to see Carrie for the first time?
No.
It was a double feature, and what it was up against was so not what you would think you would pair with this kind of movie, and he was expecting people to get up and leave. He was like, this entire crowd does not care about a white girl having her period. And everyone's going to leave, and he and his wife are just kind of sitting there, slunk into their seats, hoping that, you know, it's not too horrible. And an entire audience that was screaming at the screen for the first film and everything else just shut up, watched the movie, and clapped at the end. And he's like, I almost cried, because... That's when I realized, okay, this movie thing's a good idea.
one of the things that I heard, and I don't know, I think he wrote it, was that he threw away the manuscript for Carrie, mm-hmm. and his wife took it out of the garbage can.
Oh, that's fantastic.
A point that you brought up about, you know, Stephen King being popular culture, and... You brought up with, you know, Sam Raimi and Clive Barker and them. It's, you know, that also, when you become popular culture, you bring a counterculture. And this goes to the whole thing that there's no such thing as bad publicity. And it's that same sort of thing. You know, once you're that big and he got that big, that eventually not only is your work popular, your imitators are popular, and everybody who is trying not to be you, from the people that are sick and tired of everything you do, all that stuff becomes automatically popular too, because it is not you. So it's like winning and losing, cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
Not only am I popular, but so are my enemies. Suck it, you know? Look at how awesome.
Can I be that? That would be awesome. Mm. All right, I think we have a question right here. I can't remember it off the top of my head. I just remember the feel of it because he was telling the story on that short-lived Whoopi Goldberg talk show where she would spend an hour with somebody and they would just chat, and he spent like 20 minutes talking about it, and I just can't remember the name of the movie, so I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to look even stupider. But
then the girl with the pom-pom on her head.
Yes, then the girl with a pom-pom in her head. For the listeners at home, I am dressed as a Moogle. So, Kupo, yes. So what I want to talk about right now, though, is very important. Most important question. Which of these two do you want to hang out with and be BFFs with, or drinking buddies, and you decide which, and why? And we're going to start with Christiana.
This is king by a mile. Paula is a weirdo.
That's just because you don't want tuberculosis.
Well, that too.
I don't want TB.
King seems like a super cool guy. He writes columns about pop culture and Entertainment Weekly. He's written a lot of books that I really enjoy. He seems cool. Poe? Yeah. Like, that's the guy across the street to
avoid. Paul is my homeboy. I'm gonna put on a long black coat, light some candles, get out some red wine, start playing some Nine Inch Nails on the background, and yeah, you know, little goth kids at heart, and we'll get along. We'll talk about the people that hurt us in high school and why we don't like that anymore. Show cutting scars. You know,
he was a cryptography nerd too, right?
And yeah, with the guy with the Enigma logo on his keychain, I think we'll get along just fine, like deciphering his stuff into Code Purple or something, and we'll have all kinds of fun.
Dude, let me tell you about this Enigma thing. It's gonna blow your mind.
Rotary wheel ciphers, woohoo!
Jared?
If we can pick the author from any era, there's something about the description. King has both talked about this outside of his books, but often inside his books. One of his favorite things to do at a time, in a time when maybe we were a little more slack about these things, he loved to drive the American highways and just have an open can of beer beside him and just be like driving and thinking and driving and thinking. And maybe not the drunk driving part, but I kind of get that. I wouldn't mind going on a long road trip with Stephen King and just talking things through with him.
That would be cool. That would be cool. And a similar experience for Poe would be going on a nice grave walk with him.
Or having him brick you into a wall. Is
yeah.
Well, I was thinking of his personal life. There's no, so far not been anything saying that he actually bricked someone into a wall. But I will agree that...
It's implied.
It is implied. So, I definitely think I would love to have a drink with Stephen King and talk over supper or whatever. And Poe would probably be the creepy guy in the corner who keeps staring at us. But I think it would be interesting to have a conversation with Poe. I'm not sure we would be friends, but I would love to have a conversation with him. Yes, I know the time.
The other movie was a Red Fox comedy.
That's it.
Norman, Is That You? I've never seen
it. It's a blip on the radio, but it was a Red Fox comedy, and that's why people were shouting at the screen. Thank you so much, Roche. So for me, I have to agree, like, I would totally hang out with Stephen King, but maybe we could talk about Poe's works, and that would be a lot of fun.
One of the things about King sort of makes him a more attractive person to hang out with, other than that, I think. After talking to Poe for an hour or so, I wanted to go buy some straight razors and just hit it all. is that I've seen King talk in front of crowds about the craft of writing and the craft of creation and his life. And he's extraordinarily articulate about it, and he's extraordinarily charismatic about it. And to just be able to sit there with him and being interactive about it would be mind-blowing. No matter what phase of his life.
He's definitely got a more mentor kind of a role to other writers.
To be fair to Poe, we're so far away from his time that all we have to shape our image of him now is the work. And even then, everyone just turns to The Raven or turns to the most known stuff. how many of us have actually sat down and collected his newspaper articles? Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many things that we might, you know, well, yeah, okay, nutty, yes.
It's the course. I took a course.
I feel like we're not seeing him in a conversational tone to yeah, go to whoever just said.
And a lot of us, he's just sort of the caricature of a, you know, thin guy in a black suit with a mustache and blue eye.
Well, married his first cousin who was 14 years old and all this other, but not, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis did too.
Yeah. One, just to follow up on what you were saying, Stephen King's book On Writing,
yes,
is amazing. Mm-hmm. Anyone who hasn't read it and has interest, any interest in writing, should pick that one up immediately.
I was just going to say, isn't that like one of the books that if you want to be a writer, you should buy and read?
In my opinion,
yeah,
yes.
I'm asking the writers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, this is a total tangent, but one of the first things that comes to my mind when I think of Edgar Allan Poe is actually a scene from the cartoon Venture Brothers. There's a big guy named Brock Samson, and one of his lifelong dreams that he never thought would ever be able to happen is to put Edgar Allan Poe in a headlock, but there is an episode where they have a time machine and he gets his chance.
I also want to say that because we are in Maryland, I still think that Edgar Allan Poe, he's got home turf advantage, and that's definitely going to go on there. And for Christiana and I feel that for me, when I was reading Game of Thrones, because it is the first book of A Song of Ice and Fire, as I'm reading about the Targaryens, I'm like, the House of Usher! The weakness!
Yes.
Oh my goodness, the crazy! And so, we share that, and that was really cool.
Not being crucified for saying that. I haven't read any of George R.R. Martin's Song of Power.
I didn't spoil anything.
You and me both, brother.
But, shush you.
But what I know of it, I would think that him would remind you more of King.
Yeah,
because of the expansive world building,
yep,
the multiple threads.
And the fact that he's got so many different genres that he's written in, and he is so prolific, but
also long books.
Long books. Yeah, he does do short fiction, and there is a lot of short fiction out there, but he does a lot of long books. So he's definitely more in the line of Stephen King, and he is living the life like Stephen King, because all he has to do is write now.
Mm-hmm.
Although his early years were a lot more like Poe, where nobody was appreciating it, and he had to, you know, lower his standards and work in TV.
Yeah, to be fair to Poe,
he's back in HBO.
Yeah. To be fair to Poe, he couldn't have the expansive world-building thing,
yeah,
because every story he was selling as, please, magazine, just buy this story for me. I need to get some food,
need
frankly.
To eat and drink.
Mostly drink.
All right, so now I'd like to just quickly go around, and we are going to... Well, first off, let's just do some applause here. So, Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah!
Whoa. All right. Stephen King?
Yeah.
I'm disappointed in you all, but your opinions are valid, but I'm disappointed in you all. No, just kidding. So now everyone up here is going to be able to pimp the awesome works that they are doing, and you should really get into that. And if you need more information, you can come up. There are stickers here. There are business cards. Christiana may have her flyers still. And I invite everyone to please come to the New Media Geek Homecoming Dance tonight, 10 o'clock in the garden. So, Jerdy.
Everything I do can be found over at skinner.fm or at flashbulb.com. A lot of fiction actually influenced by both these gentlemen, so feel free to swing on by. We also do The Flashcast, which is a chatty talk show.
And the Chrononaut Cinema Review.
Oh, I should, yeah. Sorry, I'm going to get in trouble with some stairs down there. Yeah, the Chrononaut Cinema Review, in which we look back at terrible films of yesteryear and through a modern lens and try to deconstruct them a little bit. To go back, it's interesting, sorry, to jump back to the actual topic. Carrie came out, we had a very strong female lead who actually is a sympathetic villain, and then nothing. Like, for so many years, we lost the female perspective. It's very strange that his earliest, maybe strongest, influence right there just kind of...
I think the closest you get is, it's not her perspective, but is Misery.
Oh, you make a point.
Yeah.
But even then, she's much less sympathetic. Like, you have a certain amount of sympathy for her, but Carrie, at every moment, you feel for her,
yeah,
and then you're like, oh, okay, maybe the murdering everybody, we should stop, but...
All right, Christiana?
All of my stuff can be found at christianaellis.com. But in particular, my book, Nina Kimberly the Merciless, and the radio play, Space Casey, both seasons, are also available at podiobooks.com, all as free podcasts. And or you can buy Nina Kimberly. It's also in print.
And can you give us some exciting news about Consumption?
Oh, yes. So Consumption is the show that the a group of us from the Specfic Media family used to do when Game of Thrones was not in season. But we had kind of a hiatus, a gap, due to the loss of PG this past year. But we are bringing it back once the current season of Beyond the Wall is done.
Yes, so it is coming back, and you're going to get all your geekiness and all of your awesomeness. And I know Viv wanted to talk about, she's working on another anthology, and I think that's vividmusecreations.com, that you can look for announcements there. She is also bringing back Girls Rules, which will also be at Vivid Muse Creations. And yeah, and we are also both from specficmedia.com, and we do Beyond the Wall, Game of Thrones podcast, which is spoiler-free since 2011. And Tech, what do you want to plug?
So, bye, I'm Tech. You can find all my writings at nimlas.org. I write about guns, ballistics, science, nerd stuff. But I want to end by concluding by saying that I am a beer-swilling, gun-toting army guy. I am as boring and as meat and potatoes as you can think. And if you can find an author out there who can make me want to sit down and not only read a poetry and like it, but want to read more poetry. Stephen King doesn't make me want to read poems. So just think about how expansive, that's how mind-expanding Poe was for me. Not only was The Raven that good of a poem, but it was, I want to read more poems if poems can be that good.
Okay, so are you inviting people to send you their poems?
No.
Are you inviting some of the authors that you know to start writing poetry and get you interested in poems again?
Yes, send me all your gothy poetry.
That's a young man from Toronto.
Yeah, we know exactly. I look forward to that one. That one won't be aired. All right, thank you very much. Oh, and one more thing. There is the Tales of the Tesla Ranger, which is an anthology that goes to the Children's Trust for PG Holyfield. You may be able to still buy print copies here. And if you do, you can get them signed at the new media party at 10 p.m. in the Garden Room. Thank you very much, everyone. This show will be found at nimlas.org at some point. Thank you and good night. Goodbye, Balticon!
I love you,
Nerdy! I love you, too.
I'm Joaquin Vern of the Freelance Hunters. Is your remote peasant village threatened by bandits? Is your home situated upon a ghastly portal to the Nether Realms? Want to destroy that cursed family heirloom, but don't have the time to trek hundreds of miles to toss it in that volcano yourself? Call the firm of Bywater, Proudfoot, and Vern, Freelance Hunters. When the guards won't touch it, and the guild wants an arm and a leg, we can help. Monsters exterminated, treasure recovered, bounties collected. Dragons a specialty. That's The Freelance Hunters, a weekly heroic fantasy podcast. Listen free at thefreelancehunters.com or in iTunes. We're ready to believe you.
Nutty Bites is produced at Nimlas Studios. You can find us on the web at nimlasstudios.org. This work is created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported International License. What that means is you can share it, you can send it to your friends, you just can't make any money off of it, you can't change it, and you have to link back to me, my site, and everything. You can comment and send feedback by going to nimlas.org/nuttybites. You can go to facebook.com/group/nuttybites. You can call the comment line by going to 347-NUTTY42, or you can find me on Twitter, you can search on Google+, you can search the web, you can find me everywhere.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Now we're recording.
I'd hit that twice.
Jesus.
It is way too early for that level of humor. Save that for later.
Character name, Jesus Roach.
Jesus Roach.
I call him Toxic.
Jesus, it'd already be done, Jason.
Exactly. That's Toxic with three X's.
With three X's. I was going to leave that out because it is still daylight, but yes.
So, looking around here, is there anybody who's never heard Nutty Bites?
I've never heard it.
Is there anyone here lying?
Not you, but...
Yeah, but not about
you
that.
Why would I do that?
Yes, why would you do that? Why would you listen to Nutty Bites except to hear all the swears?
You have one new listener.
I do. Oh, it's very exciting. Yay, new listener.
Three new listeners.
Oh, yeah, new listener. Somebody who knows me but has never listened, so that's good.
You have a podcast?
Yeah.
What's a podcast?
What's a podcast?
I deeply enjoyed the blooper reel on the Tongue Survival Guide episode.
They're delicious.
The arguing over swearing?
Yes.
Yes, I enjoyed that too. Wait, what did you guys think of the alarms? For the most important information.
Oh, yeah. I did notice, however, Tech had like 5 golden rules.
Yes. Yes.
He's like, the golden rule is...
He's like Barney Stinson. The number one rule is...
Yeah.